as we're discussing service management, a very important aspect is that services and manufacturing can no longer be dissociated, because services play a very important role in the manufacturing of goods. So, for example, there is a term which has become popular, the origins of which can be traced to the Swedish National Board of Trade, servicification, which is nothing but the role of services in the manufacturing industry, whether that's movement of goods, whether that is technology, design, engineering, strategy, training, installation, various aspects of it, which are all part of services, but going into the manufacturing of goods. Now, a lot of the products that we finally receive in our hands, and I've been giving the example of iPhone because it's such a high-end product and there's so much people are willing to pay so much for it, and you know, it is such a prestige product. Now, actually, if you were to demarcate and see the cost of the physical elements that are going into the creation of the iPhone, they would probably just about contribute 15 to 20% of the cost of the iPhone. The balance would be coming from services, the engineering services, the design services, the technology services, which are going into creating this. And then, you know, the value as perceived by the customer who is willing to pay whatever amount. So services are integral across the life cycle of the manufacturing process. So they come in right from data to design to innovation to movement. So many aspects where services play a role. So, for example, 2017 study by OECD showed that 25 to 60%, very wide range of employment in manufacturing industries actually comes from the services functions. And, you know, that is such a large part of, you know, what is going into creating the goods which cannot be wished away from your manufacturing process. So, for example, look at the automobile industry. It's a physical, tangible product, right? We use it daily. We can touch it, feel it. There are so many parts going into it. But actually, studies show that more than 50% of the cost of automobiles, of manufacturing an automobile, are coming from the services that are going into that, creation of that. So you understand the end product is not simply the cost which is going into the various parts, but there are the input factors, you know, which may be coming in at the design, strategy, engineering, training, installation phase of your manufacturing, or at the output, which is your point of merchandise sale, whether that is, for example, you could have financial services. Now, very often when you go to aggregator like an Amazon, their site to purchase something, what you will notice is there is a price, you know, pay now, or it also throws up an EMI option. You know, an EMI option, should you use the service of, you know, this card or the service of this bank or the service of, you know, whatever, then you can pay on a monthly EMI basis. So that is a financial service. Then students take loans. They are going in for education. They may be, you know, going in for travel, but they would be getting provided loans from various banks. When you're buying an automobile, all your major banks have a consumer loan section, have a housing loan section. So finance, which is actually a service, is playing such a major role in the whole eventual value that one is getting out of that manufactured product. You know, for phones, there are loans for, practically so many products, there are loans. I mean, I'm telling you, like, as much as, your small items, for some of the smaller items, you get EMI options on these various platforms. So there is so much of servicing which is going into the whole entire life cycle of your manufacturing. Now, data, we keep talking about IT-enabled services. There is so much data analysis, data requirement, which is required in manufacturing these days. So data analytics, you know, people who can handle data, it is such a huge requirement and employment creator. And, you know, one of the recent studies by your McKinsey showed that, let's go back a decade. You know, today we are very familiar with, you know, big data and IT and AI and virtual reality and all of those. But let's go back a decade and look at the cross-border, you know, across countries, the cross-border data flows between 2005 to 2015, approximately, you know, that decade. And cross-border data flows grew by close to 50%. Now, that is a previous decade. We all know how much the use of technology and data has magnified in the last decade. So that is, again, a very integral role of services as, you know, playing their part in the manufacturing of, in the manufacturing process. Now, okay, a product is manufactured. What about distribution services? We spoke about distribution services earlier, right? Now, unless the manufactured product through its proper inventory management goes to, reaches the end consumer, how will the, you know, value be delivered to the customer? So the movement of goods, that becomes a huge, you know, a service which is required in manufacturing. I mean, look at the shipping companies, look at the freight forwarders, look at the, you know, highways, trucks, buses, etc. They're actually playing a very, very significant role in the manufacturing process, because without that, the life cycle cannot be completed. Now, to give you another very everyday practical example, I receive something from, let's forget about big products and big transport happening across, you know, the country or international territories, but just think of it from the point of view of you buy something, you purchase something from a site, you receive the product, you're not happy with it for whatever reason, or you, you know, it's different, or, you know, you've changed your mind. Some of the, you know, aggregators and vendors allow you to do that, and you want to return it. There is a service involved to pick up, returning. So it doesn't, the life cycle doesn't end with you receiving the product, manufactured product, and that's the end of it. Post the that, there is servicing, there is returns, there are logistics, so many things. So today, if you go and buy a laptop, okay, physical, manufactured, tangible product, right? So at a lot of places where you go to buy a laptop, they will say, ma'am, would you like to purchase, along with your laptop purchase, would you like to take a package of, you know, the guarantee of so much so? And in that guarantee, you're getting free servicing for a period of XYZ time frame. You go and buy a smartphone. At the time of the purchase, you will be asked, ma'am, okay, this is the cost of this. And if you also purchase this service in it, or this warranty in it, or this extra guarantee in it, then there is like no cost and free servicing and replacement of part for XYZ period or whatever. So it is not ending with the simply the sale of the manufactured product. The manufacturing life cycle is going way beyond that. So for example, someone bought a refrigerator from Amazon. Now, this refrigerator, along with the refrigerator, they also bought some warranty or guarantee for an extra so much time. Now, 7-8 months down the line, the refrigerator malfunctioned and there was some compressor problem or something which needed to be replaced, which had a cost of 5,000 rupees or something. Now, because of that warranty which they had purchased, this for a marginal extra cost, this, you know, was replaced free of cost. So, post-sale, whether it's feedback, whether it is servicing, whether it is maintenance, you know, whether it is replacement, all of these elements keep the life cycle of the manufacturing process alive way beyond just the point of sale. And this is where services are coming into the picture and being a part of the end value that one is getting. So much so that a lot of manufacturing companies, a big part of their revenue is actually coming from services that they have started providing. So, for example, Rolls-Royce, Xerox, large corporations like these have a large part of their revenue coming in from services segment and services departments where they are offering various kinds of services and earning revenue for it. And we'll be touching on that. So we have understood how there is this impact, and this is leading not just to a psychological impact, this is leading to a monetary impact, which is enabling the profitability. At the end of the day, you know, we cannot lose sight of profitability. No one is running a charitable economy or, you know, manufacturing company. You know, that's for the social service sector. Now, this profitability leads to your shareholder value, leads to, you know, your growth. So all of these elements are integral to the whole process of the life cycle of the manufacturing process. So today, if you have a company which is not, where the top management is not involved in your services element, and pretty much they are geniuses in terms of how the product is created, manufactured, simply the physical product, you know, there's going to be obviously gaps and eventual, you know, repercussions, because you cannot ignore the importance of the service element of it. So for someone who is at the top management, whether it's the CEO or whoever else, you cannot forget the service element of it. You know, you have to keep sight of that. You have to ensure training is happening. You have to ensure innovation is happening. You have to ensure that SOPs are being given. You have to ensure that there is a performance element which is coming into play, because with services, performance becomes very important. A lot of companies go for performance related pay, you know. So you have to ensure that not just you, but all of your employees are in the loop when it comes to the importance of services, even if they are working for a manufacturing company per se. To understand further the role of services in manufacturing, just think of Boeing. Now, Boeing, what do we think of Boeing when we, you know, visualize? Large airplanes, you know. So when you manufacture a plane, understand that almost 4 million parts are going into a single airplane. For the creation of that plane, there are another 65 million parts going through the factories at various stages of the manufacturing of this plane across the various process design life cycle stages. However, for the creation of this, over and above these 4 million parts which are going into creation of the plane and 65 million which are going through various different elements at different stages of the manufacturing, there's obviously design involved, technology involved, data analytics involved, so much process management which is involved. And this is something that companies like Boeing acknowledge. So I was reading the interviews of one of their VPs, and he said that I no longer want to think of Boeing as a manufacturing company. I want to think of it, and I want my customers to think of it as a service management company, because he said that, you know, these parts which may be physically creating, but he said, I have so much data management, IT, digital elements which are involved. And he said, for each of these parts, I have to maintain the individual data on each of these parts for 40 to 50 years, which is typically the lifespan of a plane. Now, can you imagine the kind of data management services which are going into that, the digital services, the engineering services, the quality control services, the analysis, all of that, which is going into procurement services, etc., which are going into this whole process. So servicing today is a very, very large element of manufacturing at a smaller, more day-to-day level. So we have various sporting goods, right? It could be a Fitbit, it could be it could be various other products of the sporting industry, and people are willing to pay a fair amount for these because of the differentiation, because of the quality associated with these products. Now there is this trend of smart sporting products. Now what happens with these is that there is data which is being uploaded to a crowd, to a cloud. There, these smart products, which could be, Fitbit or, like measuring your various vitals or various other elements. And through those, the manufacturers analyze the data received and work on that and can get back with feedback and guidance in terms of improving the performance and improving the functionality to the end user. So for example, if I'm playing a certain sport there's a certain kind of racket and how I use it, and there is a certain element of design and engineering which is embedded in this, which is measuring my serve and my pace and various other elements, that's actually being used, the data is being assimilated, it is being analyzed, and one could get back with how you can improve your game, what is it that you can improve on, because they have data from so many, and this data can be analyzed even for the biggest sports stars in that specific sport. So there is so much of servicing which can become an element of so many more manufacturing industries at various levels of the life cycle of the good which we are talking about, or the product that we are talking about. So now, talking about the role of servicing in manufacturing and how there is a case where while the manufacturing may have been, state of the art, but various elements at different levels of the life cycle of the product probably didn't fall in place as seamlessly as they should have. Let's look at the example of Google Glass. Now, Google Glass, a lot of you may never have heard of it, and I wouldn't blame you because it was taken off the market, no longer in production. But Google Glass was launched in 2014, and it's literally spectacles, glasses as in spectacles. It was way too ahead for its times, just one of the challenges and issues with it. But it was created as a, these glasses, smart glasses, which could send a lot of data to your glasses directly. They were like an augmented, Google's answer to augmented reality, So they had an inbuilt camera, embedded camera, would send you data on, your environment. I'm sure a bunch of you are probably thinking of, movies like Minority Report. If you're interested in that kind of augmented reality, in that kind of design, that kind of engineering, futuristic kind of concept, then I would highly recommend the movie Minority Report, in which, it's a Tom Cruise movie, and how, in a futuristic world, how they, through these embedded designs, how they analyze, data, know about people, keep track of people, monitoring systems, etc. So anyway, coming back to Google Glass, you have this product which was launched, and it was a very high-end product, of course. You can imagine the kind of R&D, that research that went into it, the conceptualization, you can imagine the kind of technology that went into it. And of course, it was launched with a lot of fanfare. However, it was not received well because it was one considered, conceptually it was good, but having a device, wearing a device and a device with a camera embedded, people couldn't practically really, enjoy it. There was a lot of confusion on how to use it, you know, the usability of it. Also, the communication in terms of its users got lost at times. There was a gap in understanding that, it was not as, functionally smooth as, the consumer might want. It's one thing for the employees and the engineers to feel very comfortable with its functionality. They know it all. They are, technical people. But it's quite another thing to have a consumer get comfortable with it. There were, having said that, it's not like Google didn't do its homework in terms of, having a marketing push, in terms of having tie-ups with high fashion brands. And, it was even, showcased at Fashion Weeks, which is a big thing, to sell it as something which can be a fashion statement for people who are into these gadgets. But bottom line, there were technological issues, there were digital issues, there were a lot of problems, and it kept on getting launched, pulled back. So it was launched for the first time in 2014, pulled back in 2015. It was relaunched in 2019 and then pulled back in 2023. And 2023 is when production and servicing of Google Glass completely ceased to happen. Now, they did boast during that time, they did boast corporate clients, who bought into it, manufacturing clients who bought into it, who found the use of it in terms of analyzing data, in terms of, accessing data, etc., through this embedded technology. But despite that, despite boasting these, clients, it's still, the product still, didn't work and had to be pulled off the market. While there were companies like clients like GE, DHL, Volkswagen, who purchased the subscribed to this Google Glass product, and what it allowed them to do was inspect, because there's this inbuilt camera, have accessibility through videos, made inspection easier, more accessible. They could analyze videos and photos, etc. But despite having this kind of reception from a certain segment, by and large, it was considered high cost, qualitatively not, consistent, functionally not consistent, and hence didn't work, and maybe too far ahead of its time without enough, research, on prototyping, on the prototype, so that you can be ready to launch at a time which is more suitable for you. And as we'll see with a bunch of the other products, which didn't really work well, is that not enough went into, not enough research went into the products, and there was a rush to launch the product, and of course, didn't work. So there was a lack of research element of service going into, understanding how well the product would be received. So eventually, this is what happened at a very functional level. Let's say that consumers started warming up to the Google Glass. Unfortunately, there were a lot of people who had concerns about data privacy, security. Imagine walking into a restaurant or any other, place, an office, any other place, and you're wearing glasses which can automatically start recording. Now, people don't appreciate that. Businesses don't appreciate that. And they may want to know. So there were a lot of restaurants, there were a lot of places which started banning people from entering if they were wearing Google glasses, you know, completely like barring it, banning it. So obviously, it was not something which was appreciated from a privacy security point of view. And these were just some of the challenges which, you know, took the product down eventually. Likewise, you know, looking at another example where it was a manufactured product, but, you know, it didn't really, despite having a good product, a decent product, it wasn't really received very well by the customers. So we all know Burger King, you know, the burger giant Burger King. And they have their regular fries, which are not exactly the healthiest thing around. It's, you know, you want to have your fries, you want to have your French fries, you want to have your burgers. And there is the oil in which it's being fried and it's, you know, nice and greasy and heavy. So Burger King, you know, conceptualized something called Satis Fries, a product called fries called Satis Fries, a low, you know, low fat, using low fat oils, a healthier option of fries versus their regular fries, which consumers could buy. However, you know, the message didn't go across clearly. So a lot of customers were just unaware of why, what's the Satis fries were, that they're a healthier option. They were also more expensive versus your regular fries, of course. But maybe if the consumers had understood that through the marketing communication, through the employee communication and engagement, that these provided them a benefit in terms of health, they might have been willing to pay that extra you know, cost for them. But there was a gap in terms of the communication, in terms of the marketing, in terms of really making people understand the difference, the differentiation between the regular fries and these. And eventually, you know, it was just something that came and went, and, you know, Burger King pulled it and didn't really see the results that they would have wanted to see from this. So these are some of the examples where something interesting was conceptualized, launched, offered, had the potential to, you know, become something bigger, be well received, but because of various elements of service, services which didn't, which weren't as effective along the life cycle of the product, they had to be pulled back. Let's take the example of Rolls-Royce. So instead of selling jet engines, they provide a pay by the hour, power by the hour service. And a huge amount of the revenue is, you know, it's close to 55-60% is coming through service revenue, you know, through providing it as a service rather than dumping this ownership onto the their clients. So it provides a lot of flexibility, ease, and, you know, this also leads to increased customer loyalty, where, you know, you have a steady stream of income, because the greater the flexibility and convenience, you know, chances that they will stick with you will be a lot higher, you know, versus having they might be more. Think of it in this way: when you go to buy an apartment versus you go to rent an apartment, the commitment for buying is so much higher. Over and above the budget layout, once that deal is done, you're probably going to stick with it for decades, okay? And what if after buying, you're having second thoughts, you're having doubts? It's not something which you change very fast. So let's say that you rent it. You have a one-year lease agreement, two-year lease agreement, a three-year lease agreement. You're happy, you keep renewing it. Unhappy, you have, you know, you can move on. So another element which becomes very important in service arrangements like this, even with manufacturing companies, is the contract management. And another chapter, we are going to be talking about the service of contract management, adhering to the, you know, the maintenance, adhering to the terms of the contract, who's monitoring it, how that is sensitive and critical, and where it has led to success or failure of companies. So like Rolls-Royce, there is Xerox Corporation, which also gets a huge amount of its revenue from post-sale service, because life cycle of the product and manufacturing cycle does not end with the sale. There is post-sale service which is ongoing, continuing, and has to be supplied. There has to be a supply for it. Other examples that we can think of is, for example, ABB. When they have the industrial machinery segment, there they provide the service of maintenance for the industrial machinery clients, monitoring, feedback, sharing the data. So again, it's an organization that you would associate with manufacturing, but it's also providing a large segment of service. Likewise, you have Siemens health engineers. And they are a leading provider of health services to health equipment and services to the healthcare sector. Now they provide upgrades, they provide performance enhancement guidance, they provide so much which is by way of service rather than only by way of manufacturing. So this whole aspect of service in manufacturing is something which is very closely linked, whether it is, as I was giving you the example of cooling, AC as a service, cooling as a service, or refrigeration as a service, and the Nigerian company, or the Kenya-based SokoFresh company, or the Cold Hub in Nigeria. What these are also achieving, where it is given by way of service rather than a one-time sale, is that it is bringing you a steady stream of income in the future. Because if the customer is satisfied, which is, hopefully you're delivering your managing your service well, then it gives you a long-term steady stream of income. When you have, let's say you also provide services of advertising, sponsorship, you have subscription models, all of these can enhance the elongate the association that the customer has with you and keep it ongoing. So at a very basic level, to give you an example, there is a company called Chaios, which makes these masala tea bags. Now, when you are traveling, it's very often not possible to be making the masala tea the way we make it in our kitchen. So you want an experience as close as possible to that, even if you're using a tea bag, because otherwise a lot of times tea can be very weak and, it doesn't give you that wake up kick. Now, so when I travel, I like to carry a box of, the Chaios tea bag tea. And now when I buy it from certain vendors online, and once again, the shampoo example that I was giving you, once again, this is a product you can buy on multiple platforms. You can buy at the Chaios outlets, you can buy it on Amazon, you can buy sometimes find it on Swiggy, Instamart. So once again, they have enhanced their distribution service. They are making sure that a loyal customer is having the flexibility of buying it at multiple points so that they don't switch to a competitor. So now when I buy this from one of the platforms, very often when I'm buying it, it gives me a pop-up and an option to subscribe to it so that every month there will be a recurring sale and they will sell it to it, because they seem to have their algorithm and their data analysis seems to have seen that I buy it at regular periods, these boxes, which have whatever 25, 30 tea bags in them. And they give me an option to, subscribe, so that every month, if I tick that option, then every month by default, they will send this to me. So when you have this subscription base, then it is giving you a longer association engagement with the customer. It's giving you a steady stream of income. And once a person subscribes, it's true of subscriptions that, very often they have, 7-day free trial period and all of that for other kinds of, IT services. But typically with a subscription, whether it's a newspaper subscription, whether it's a, tea bag tea subscription, whether it's a Netflix subscription, various other subscriptions, typically a customer will cancel the subscription, which requires separate action, a conscious separate action typically they will cancel it only when they are completely dissatisfied, they are unhappy, or there is some other reason in terms of, you know, relocation or what have you. So when you have subscription, and if you're giving a service, you're delivering on that service in a very good way, you're keeping the customer happy, chances that that effort to cancel the subscription will be put in will not be there. Because as I said, people take that action only when they are really, really dissatisfied with a service. And then, of course, in this day and age of IT, you know, technology, it's very, very easy to move your business to a competitor. You know, as several studies have shown, you know, Salesforce has done a lot of studies on these. And it shows that, you know, 90% of customers say that because of technology, it makes it very easy for them to switch their business to competition if they are dissatisfied. So with service, there are these advantages with these different models. Even if it's a manufacturing entity, if they bundle their you know, product and product life cycle as these services of association, you know, other forms could be licensing, royalty, various other forms of associations which can give flexibility and convenience to the customer without the burden of a one-time very large commitment, and also at the same time, you know, ensure a longer term engagement and steady revenue stream.